Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
The first 3 years for Kirby Smart at Georgia have no doubt been incredibly impressive, and no doubt Georgia fans have a hunger that years four, years five, year six, year seven, that the best for the Bulldogs is even yet to come, and there's plenty of reason to think that might be the case. But for a moment here, as a part of what's kind of our series of vacation podcasts on Dog Nation Daily, I kind of want to spend a moment talking about something about Kirby Smart that I think maybe does not quite get enough attention, because this is actually pretty rare when it comes to the recent landscape of college football. Connor Riley, who's helping me record these here as a part of our summer series while we're on vacation, is going to hop in here and be a part of this with me for a moment. There are a lot of coaching rankings that come out this time of year. I'm going to give you an example of one of these. Our buddy Barrett Salee over at CBSSports.com ranked his top SEC coaches. Now, for the most part, Barrett's list doesn't look that different than, say, Bill Bender at the Sporting News and some of the other folks, Athlon Sports, who've done this. The rankings, kind of, for the most part, kind of look the same. But I want to chat about this from the CBS side of things for a moment, just to kind of give us a jumping off point for this conversation. According to Barrett, the best coach in the SEC right now is Nick Saban. That's probably not a surprise. Barrett has Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M ranked as the second best coach in the SEC right now. There may be, you know, some debate on that and some argument of Jimbo being overrated given how it ended for him at Florida State. But in fairness to Barrett, I know Bill Bender at the Sporting News had Jimbo ranked ahead of Kirby at least, and some of these other guys may have there as well. But when you get to Kirby Smart at number three, that's where I think things get interesting. So for a moment in this conversation, let's put aside whether or not we think that Kirby's actually a better coach than Jimbo Fisher, many UGA fans do, and let's put aside what it's going to take for Kirby Smart to finally overtake Nick Saban as the SEC's best coach. Put that aside for a moment. Connor, what I think is kind of interesting is, and by the way, for those of you, I know many of you know who Connor Riley is, but read Good Day UGA in the mornings at DogNation.com. See him on our videos. He's a big-time fixture on Dog Nation Daily on video and just kind of a big part of the team here at Dog Nation. So if you're a podcast listener and you haven't gotten acquainted with Connor Riley yet, he is an important part of what we do here at Dog Nation, so I want to give him a chance to be a part of our podcast here today. But Connor, when I look at the rest of this list of SEC coaches, and as I said, you know, for the most part, I don't care if it's Barrett Salee or anybody else, these are, for the most part, going to kind of look the same here for a moment. Look at Dan Mullen, arguably fourth best SEC coach. Gus Malzahn, arguably fifth best. Ed Orgeron, LSU, sixth best. Isn't it kind of funny, you get to the Jeremy Pruitts eventually and others, it doesn't seem like right now Kirby Smart has really anybody nipping at his heels of taking the corner that Kirby Smart's kind of carved out for himself in the SEC. No one in the East seems close to being able to do that. And while Orgeron did get the head-to-head win over Kirby back this past year, from a national stature standpoint, I think that Georgia's still out in front of LSU by a good bit. It's unusual to see Kirby Smart put as much distance between himself and his competition as he has. Now, he's got guys yet he hasn't vanquished, and that's the thing we spend most of the time talking about. But isn't it kind of interesting just how much space there is between Kirby and whatever the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh best SEC coach is? It's unusual to have that big of a gap the way we seem to have it right now.
Right. You know, a lot of people are probably projecting forward that maybe Pruitt might get to Smart's level, but that's still, he still has to take a lot of steps with that Tennessee program to get there. Mullen, I know people, you know, love to say he does less with more, but he needs to start getting more at Florida if they're really going to contend with Georgia, in my opinion. They need to start recruiting better. They need better players. And frankly, they need better coaching. I mean, the last two years, Kirby's gone against Mullen. Neither of those final scores have been particularly close. So it is interesting that there's no one behind him. And also, he's still got some distance to run down the guys in front of him. Even if he does beat Nick Saban and Dabo Sweeney this year, yeah, those wins alone aren't going to vault him to the number one coach in America. He's still got to catch up to, you know, Sweeney and Saban by doing this, winning and beating those guys, not just 1 year, but over the course of multiple years.
Well, it's interesting you bring up Jeremy Pruitt, and for what it's worth, CBS recently ranked him as the 11th best SEC coach. It's interesting that you bring up Pruitt because, let's not forget, Kirby Smart in his second year took Georgia to the college football playoff. If I told you that I predict Tennessee to win 8 games this year, you would scream, many people would scream and say, that's an impossibility. There's no way Tennessee can win 8 games. That just can't happen. So we're essentially saying, many people are essentially saying, that Pruitt couldn't do in his second year what Kirby Smart did in his first. And the idea of Tennessee, who Vols fans are really excited about Pruitt. They think he's a coach on the rise. They think that's a program on the rise. But we have just magnitudes of difference right now between what Kirby did in 2 years at Georgia and what Pruitt's likely to do at 2 years in Tennessee. That's a good example of that. And yet we have this conversation. You know, you look at Gus Malzahn for a moment. That's a coach who at one point in time won a national championship as an offensive coordinator, played for a national championship as a head coach. And, you know, he's one of the – I don't know where he ranks from a tenure standpoint, but he's been head coach there since 2013. He's got to be one of the deans of SEC coaches, right?
Yep.
Not there as long as Saban in Alabama, but he's been at his school about as long as anybody's been at their school.
Yep.
But in terms of, you know, pecking order of league coaches, there's no doubt that Kirby has completely moved Malzahn out of the picture to the point where there's a lot of honest and reasonable wondering and curiosity about, could Malzahn even survive this year if he were to not be in the thick of the SEC West race? Nick Saban has largely put Gus Malzahn on the hot seat, but Kirby Smart's also played a role in that as well.
Right. You know, if they lose that game this year and they're 7-5 once again, Auburn, it being Auburn, they're going to look at themselves in the mirror and decide, all right, how do we get our quote-unquote Kirby Smart? Because, again, if Auburn struggles this year, goes 7-5 once again, they're going to be asking a lot of questions. All right, well, Georgia turned it around really quickly when, you know, it looked like they were stuck in neutral for a little bit. How do we sort of get out of neutral and get back to the point where we're closing the gap between us and Alabama? And Smart has really, I think, reinforced that idea that Auburn has to play catch-up with Georgia and Alabama.
So the overall point I'm making here is that while we focus a lot on what Georgia's still trying to catch up to and individually the coaches that Kirby's still trying to catch up to, the most impressive thing about his first 3 years, maybe the distance he's put between himself and almost everybody else who would compete with him. However, I do, as much as possible, try to be fair and balanced. So let me be fair and balanced here for a moment. Y'all know I don't like Florida, and even apart from that, I am just skeptical of Dan Mullen as a coach, especially some of the hype he's gotten over the course of this offseason. But Connor, let me ask you, and I want you to put, you know, your analyst hat on here for a moment. What are we potentially missing? Because you're not a Gator hater in the way that I am, but you are, I think, skeptical of Mullen just like me. What are we potentially missing? If we're wrong on Mullen, and predictions turn out to be wrong all the time, if we're wrong on Mullen, why will that have been so?
You know, Florida, for as well as they don't recruit, at Mississippi State, he did a really good job of developing guys into NFL players. You saw 3 first-round draft picks from Mississippi State this past year. And a lot of the reason those guys are first-round draft picks is because of Mullen. And I think when you factor in that he's able to still pretty much always, no matter who his quarterback is, put a good, capable offense on the field, that really says a lot. And if he's able to start getting those talented quarterbacks, he is, you know, theoretically going to put him in a position to really make that offense potentially the best in the SEC.
Yeah, the other thing I'll say is that Florida, and we've talked a lot about, you know, returning production this week just because Georgia has lost some of its, and when it lost J.J. Holloman. One thing about Florida is that they are pretty experienced in returning for this upcoming year. According to Bill Conley, most recently of footballstudyhall.com, now at ESPN, they bring back 74% of their defensive and offensive stats from a year ago. That's 26th best in the country. 77% of that's on offense, which ranks 27th best. 71% of that's on defense, which ranks 43rd best. So they're not experienced at what the offensive line. They're still trying to break in some guys in their front
4 new
seven.
Starters there, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. But when it comes to rushing yards, receiving yards, passing yards, when it comes to tackles and things like that, they are pretty experienced. So if they could pull the upset over Georgia this year, I believe that Florida recruiting would then change at that point in time. I believe they'd have something to sell in state that people would buy in on. So I'm going to ask you then, given the fact that Florida does have a lot of experience from a team that last year finished in the top 10, does that make Florida more dangerous than I give them credit for being? Because honestly, the truth is, I've gone on record as saying, I believe that Florida will finish unranked this year. I believe they're going to be a preseason top 10 team that finishes unranked. Am I just simply overlooking too much the fact that their experience returning from what was already a pretty good team makes them more dangerous than I'm considering?
No, because I believe Florida was a fraudulent top 10 team last year. You look at how they started the month of November. They lose to Georgia by 19 points. Then the next week come back and just get floored at home by Missouri, who was a good team a year ago, but certainly not a team Florida should have lost to. And from there, they had some cupcakes on the schedule, turned it around, and then they get a big win over a Michigan team that admittedly had checked out on the season already. I think we might be, you know, falsely equating how Florida performed at the end of last season, specifically in that bowl game, and perhaps overrating what they might do this season because of that. I think to your point, this is a above average team, but I don't know, based on the returning production and what they are bringing in, I don't know if it's a very good team.
And then let me try to be fair and balanced with LSU here for a moment, because there is a way to argue this. Let's say that we brought an LSU fan or an LSU expert onto the set, our studio here, and he were to talk about the Tigers. There is a way to say that the only real difference between Georgia and LSU is that Georgia's losses to Alabama have been close, and LSU's losses to Alabama haven't been all that close, but LSU beat Georgia head-to-head. LSU didn't take its bowl game too lightly. It won with lack of a full roster against UCF, a team that on paper had been pretty good. There's a way to say that if LSU is really good this year, it was actually predicted by some of the stuff that happened in 2018, but people just chose not to know it. For what it's worth, Pro Football Focus, a group of people that I have at least some respect for, if not I'm as fully bought in on some of that kind of stuff as others are, but I do have a lot of respect for the work they do in their preseason ranking. They do have LSU ranked ahead of Georgia. They have LSU third. They have Georgia fourth. Is there a chance that when this season's done, LSU is better than Georgia, and when we look back on 2018 and we saw the fact that LSU beat Georgia easily, we will all say, well, we should have known based on what happened in 2018?
No. I believe as long as Ed Orgeron is the coach there and wants to play Ed Orgeron football, which is sort of that similar to Nick Saban, you know, let's line up and we're just going to bully ball you. It worked against Georgia a year ago. That style of play has not beaten Alabama and LSU and that brand of football. That has not won for them. Going back to 2011 when I was a senior in high school, it was the last time LSU beat Alabama in a competitive game. I think I don't put a lot of stock into quote-unquote, you know, being inside their own heads and not being able to get over a mental hurdle, but I actually do believe with LSU and Alabama that Alabama just so thoroughly owns LSU from a mental standpoint that they won't be able to overcome that Alabama game, and I think that in particular is going to have some ramifications for the rest of LSU's season.
I think you're right about that. I think that despite the fact that Georgia lost LSU last year, I think playing in Baton Rouge is a huge factor to overcome, even though there were a lot of Georgia fans there that day. I do think that Georgia's the better of the two teams. I guess my point for even bringing that up is I'm a lot more interested in LSU than I am Florida. I'm a lot more willing to say there could be things but LSU that I don't know that I'm pretty sure I'm not wrong about when it comes to Florida. I think that there are three teams in the SEC who are truly interesting beyond Alabama and Georgia. I think they're all three in the West and to varying degrees of likelihoods of success for this year, but I believe it's LSU, I believe it's Texas A&M, and I believe it's Auburn. I think those three teams are the wild cardish type teams in the SEC that all three could be dramatically better than expectations. Now, they won't all three be, but all three of these could be, meaning that, you know, one of these three teams could really pop up, step up, and be way better. I do think LSU is one of this league's wild cards, and Tony Barnhart said this on Friday's show on Dog Nation Daily. If you're looking for the possibility of a surprise in this league, look to the West, and it could be a team like LSU.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think LSU is close as Alabama is in terms of talent, but I think what will keep them back is just those little mental things. And I would also add, Tua Tagovailoa is much, much better than Joe Burrow is.
That is undisputed. But the overall bottom line and the overall point of all this is, when you look at what Kirby Smart's done through 3 years, with year four maybe being his most important season to date as Georgia coach, it's important to think about what Kirby still got left to do, but it's also kind of nice to look back and see what he's already done. And a lot of these so-called foes in the SEC, Kirby's done a pretty good job of vanquishing them. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans and part of our series of vacation shows. Had one yesterday, hope you caught it. We'll have another one of these today, and then we'll take a couple days off for real, and then be back in full measure, completely live and ready to go coming up on Monday. So we'll see you back in our studio for video, radio, and everything else coming up on Monday. Thanks for being a part of Dog Nation Daily today, though. More of the Jeff Sintel interview that you may not have heard the rest of yet coming up in just a bit. I'll also invite you to be a part of Dog Nation Days of Summer here Thursday, August 1st at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. That is going to be a lot of fun, and our rooms are selling out. That's no joke. That's no exaggeration. We really only have a couple of these left. In fact, I was at Brasstown this past Thursday, and that was the talk of the staff there about just how many of these rooms we've already sold. So if you want to be a part of this, make sure you get in, because they are almost gone. All right, before I get Jeff Sintel here in just a moment, I want to do one more piece of content before we get there. And this is something that I intended to do on Friday's show. A lot of days we just have too much stuff planned and we end up not getting to it all. And this was something I didn't get to. I mentioned Bill Connelly a moment ago. Bill Connelly had his first piece for ESPN.com. He's now employed there. He looked at the major national championship contenders, and he looked at some what-if scenarios that could determine whether or not they win the title or not. Now, all of these are interesting, and a lot of these are at least related to Georgia because it's Georgia's competition. But I'm going to bring Connor Riley back in on this. The three what-if scenarios for Georgia I find to be, you know, really, really interesting. He gives, and Connor wrote about this. Go back to Friday to his Good Day UGA piece at DogNation.com. You can see this. Two of these involve coordinators, which I'll get to. But Connelly uses a phrase regarding the Georgia defense that I think really hits home and really speaks to what Georgia still needs to get accomplished in 2019. Connelly called the Georgia defense last year, or I should say the run defense, strangely mediocre. I think that is such an interesting phrase to use, because I've said this over and over again. For everything that Georgia did well defensively a year ago, and it was a pretty good defense, all things being equal. It was a pretty good defense. You had DeAndre Baker winning the Thorpe Award, and a lot of attention being paid to Georgia's need to upgrade the pass rush, and that's going to come up here in a couple of minutes. Georgia did not do great at stopping the run. Strangely mediocre in that regard. I don't think those words from Bill Connelly are too strong. I really don't. The stats speak for themselves. And if Georgia is going to win a national championship this year, he at ESPN.com is also right about that. I was happy, even if it's not good news for Georgia, I was happy to see a national writer articulate what I think is on the list of issues for Georgia to face this year. Will it win the national championship? Stepping up, being stout against the run, I think is among the most important things facing this team right now. And it was interesting to see the ESPN writer take that head on in this piece for ESPN.com.
I would drop strangely from the describing Georgia's run defense last year. It was just very mediocre in general. Now, it did improve when Jordan Davis took a bigger role in the defense, and I think he is someone this year who's really going to help out. And I would also mention that in the two games at the end of the year Georgia lost, Texas and Alabama, Monty Rice did not play in that game. I think we both agree he is Georgia's best run linebacker. And I think he is someone that could really sort of help maybe not turn it into an elite level, but at least have a competent run defense that they did not a year ago.
So let me give you kind of a labored analogy for a moment. Gosh knows I need to lose weight. And when you do lose weight, you lose it from head to toe, right?
Yep.
You know, you don't lose it in one spot of your body. Recruiting works the opposite. You don't recruit from head to toe evenly. You recruit kind of in spots and fits and starts. And I think the reason why, and I know you're going to agree with me on this, the reason why Connelly says it's strangely mediocre that Georgia wasn't better against the run is because we see the stats of how well Georgia's recruiting overall, best in the country for 2018, second best in the country for 2019, third best in the country, 300-plus points for 2017. We see that success at recruiting, and we assume that it must be loaded and deep in all spots. But in terms of true difference makers for the defensive line, it was a little bit less than that, and that's why Jordan Davis' emergence mattered. That's why for 2019, this crop of freshmen on the way, not all of the major contributors, but some of them probably earning a chance to be on the field and adding to that depth. That's why that really matters. Georgia has recruited at a highly elite level, but not exactly evenly in all spots. And defensive line, up until recently, is one of those spots that had kind of lagged a little bit.
And, you know, even though, yes, they brought in five-star defensive lineman Trayvon Walker, and as well as the Tennessee three and Bill Norton, Tymon Mitchell, and Zion Logue. You know, I think we're still, when it comes to Georgia's defensive line recruiting, it still feels like we're talking more about the misses than the hits.
Yeah.
You know, you bring up Brian Brzee, You bring up, you know, guys of the past, Aubrey Solomon, who's now transferred from Michigan and is at Tennessee. You look at Derek Brown and Kirby first got here. Those guys, you know, I think last year, not having missed out on those guys over the course of years, really manifested itself sort of in the games that they ended up losing.
All right, then really quickly on this Bill Conley piece from ESPN.com, which you should check out. It's really pretty good. Let me give you one thing that Conley is wrong about and one thing that Conley is right about. Mm-hmm. Let me start with the wrong thing first. He says in his subhead here, Georgia can win a national championship if Dan Lanning dials up pressure. I am of the firm belief it is not Dan Lanning's responsibility to dial up pressure. It's Nolan Smith's responsibility to get off a block, and it's Jermaine Johnson and Adam Anderson and Brenton Cox and whomever else in the game. I don't want a coach trying to scheme a sack for Georgia. If Georgia wins the national championship, it's going to have to be because elite athletes win one-on-one battles. That's the way the pass rush has to come for Georgia. You can gimmick your way into 40 sacks, but there's also a way to do that and go 7-5 because you put your secondary in harm's way. I think that an improved pass rush for Georgia this season has to come the right way. Not with additional pass rushers, but just a better pass rush.
Right. You know, you look at the Grantham years at Georgia, that was his problem. He would send the house, and when the house doesn't get there, your defense gets torched. That's why third and Grantham is a thing, and I think that's why a lot of Georgia fans like the idea that Grantham is now Florida's defensive coordinator. Ultimately, to your point, yes, it falls on guys like Nolan Smith playing well, Azeez Ojulari. It falls on those sort of outside linebackers to step up and get pressure on the quarterback, not from, you know, bringing additional pressure or bringing pressure from all over the place, but sort of just beating your man one-on-one in passing down situations. Because last season, through the regular season, through the first 12 games, Georgia was last in the SEC in sacks. Now, yes, they had three against Alabama, so when they need to, they can sort of turn that switch on a little bit. But, you know, sacks and getting after the passer is a big issue for this Georgia team, and their leading returning sack leader from a year ago was inside linebacker Channing Tindall, who had two sacks. That has to change. Those numbers have to be much higher across the board.
So one more look at this Bill Conley piece, ESPN.com. I just gave you the thing that he was wrong about. Let me give you something he's absolutely right about. He writes that Georgia can win a national championship if James Coley can make a difference in the red zone. He goes on to give you the stat. Georgia was fifth in overall offensive success rate and 109th inside the 10-yard line.
Yep.
He says at the end of his piece about this subject that Coley can top his predecessor by showing just a little bit more creativity when a touchdown is on the line. Now, I've said before, I'm not as big a critic of Jim Chaney as many Georgia fans are. I like having fun with Chaney now that he's at Tennessee. But the fact is, I don't think Chaney was necessarily doing a bad job as Georgia offensive coordinator. But inside the 10-yard line where touchdowns are on the line, the numbers speak for themselves. Chaney was not creative enough. Now, I believe that the Georgia offense was largely Kirby Smart's creation and Jim Chaney was tasked with following those instructions. But there was the moment in the Kentucky game where Kirby Smart's got his hands on his headset just screaming into his headset that leads you to believe that maybe Chaney wasn't doing something that Kirby wanted. But the overall point here is whether Chaney was the one to blame for this or not, in the red zone, it's not about how powerful can you be and can you open up holes and run, because every safety gets to creep up. You can't throw over their heads anymore because you've only got 10 yards to throw it, you know, or I guess 20 yards to throw it if you count the back line of the end zone. You don't have that much room to work with. It really is about creativity. Georgia's going to run to get to the 10, but you don't necessarily run from the 10 into the end zone. Nope. The stats speak for themselves on that. So the task for Coley this year, it really is about being more creative. You can't power your way into the end zone from the 5-yard line. You just can't.
It's scheming ways to get guys open, to get them in space and get them into the end zone. Georgia certainly has the athletes to do that, whether it be DeAndre Swift, Zamir White, Brian Harrion, Dominic Blaylock, James Cook. I could keep listing names all day. You know, you think back to that Florida game, the one unpleasant memory in that game was that, you know, Georgia had 7 plays inside Florida's 1-yard line and could not punch it in.
Yeah.
That absolutely cannot happen this year, if only for the fact that maybe Florida fans will stop talking about that instance like they actually
Oh my gosh. I know they're going to hang a banner at Ben Hill Griffith. one of those winged walls. Yep. They're going to just put goal line stand 2019, paint that on one of those walls. And when I say be more creative, I'm also not saying, you know, fade to the back corner of the end zone either, because that's not more high percentage either. I mean,
that's not creative either.
Yeah, it's not creative. It's not more high percentage. But can you work the passing game to the front of the goal line? Mm-hmm. Can you get some of that kind of stuff involved? I do believe that's a big task for James Coley. So I think that's pretty good stuff. And I guess my final point on this before we hear some more from Jeff Sintel. If you gave me Georgia's issues versus most of these other teams' issues, because no team is perfect. Even the defending national champion is not perfect. They got a lot of defensive linemen to replace and all kinds of stuff like that. If you gave me Georgia's issues or everybody else's issues, I think Georgia's actually got it pretty good. Yep. Georgia's not a perfect team. Inexperienced at wide receiver, need to get better along the defensive line, got to upgrade your pass rush, two new coordinators, lots of seeming imperfections. But I'll take Georgia's imperfections any day of the week over a lot of teams in college football right now.
Yep, and Conley, you know, as he wrote the piece, the only two teams to have fewer quote-unquote ifs were Alabama and Clemson.
Yeah, so that's kind of where things are on that. Connor, huge stuff from you. Thanks so much. All right, I'm going to give you guys the chance to hear the rest of the Jeff Sintel interview. I'll be back to wrap up the show after that, and we'll let you guys enjoy what I hope is a really, really fun week, and get ready to count the days until we're back on Monday doing Dog Nation Daily like normal all over again. So here's the rest of Jeff Sintel. Thanks for being here, a part of Dog Nation Daily.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
I want to talk about the opening and some of the stuff that is going to go down there in Frisco, Texas. Can I do one thing before we get there, though? In an earlier portion of our conversation, you referenced Andrew Rame and some stuff you're putting in the forum at forum.dognation.com. I get the sense, based on the discussion that you and I have had on a lot of different platforms and some of the stuff that I'm reading from, you know, Georgia fans in our comment section here, that the spotlight is really seemingly on him. I know he's kind of accelerated his timeline, going back to the piece that you wrote with him not too long ago. You know, I guess what is next for Rame here? Because he's one of the ones that right now that, you know, based on the reporting that you've done, he's one of the ones that sort of, you know, I don't know. It just seems like in terms of what could be a busy July, you know, guys like him are kind of some of those dominoes that people are kind of waiting on to fall here. So what can you tell us about Rame right now?
Well, Rame took his official visit to Michigan. That was the last one. The decision is being pondered. The information that's out there that is even on the forum is that he was expected to make his decision amongst his family sometime this weekend, and then it would be shared with the world in a subsequent span of days after that. It's funny, there's a lot of stuff here about Andrew Rame, and I just kept it very simple for our readers when I broached this topic in one of those threads. As I said, I feel this decision will be a lot like the one Tate Ratledge made. It'll be a lot like even the one Tate Mays made, where you have a hometown, shirts in the closet, pictures in the scrapbook of a certain school, and that certain school is still in the running for the decision. But at the same time, a young man just decides, I want to go, and this is eventually the way it is, to just kind of distill all the stuff, Brandon. The young man decides, this is the guy that can get me where I want to go. And this is the person that I want to sit in offensive line room meetings with, the person that I want to coach me on my journey to my dreams. And that is as simple as it is. Everybody can think about Andrew Rame and the Oklahoma kid. Well, it's not any harder than pulling Isaiah Wilson out of Brooklyn, New York, away from Michigan and Alabama, when Georgia hadn't won a stinking thing in 12 years, when Isaiah Wilson was making the moves to be a Georgia Bulldog before that announcement in mid-December. Not any harder than pulling Tate Ratledge and his daddy's license plate and his daddy's back glass sticker off that truck. Not any harder than pulling the son of a Tennessee captain away from the program, which was led by Phil Fulmer as athletic director at the time, and Tate Mays. Not any harder than any of this other stuff. I can even add Xavier Truss, a young man from Rhode Island, when every soothsayer in the world with a crystal ball predictions account said he was going to go to Penn State. Georgia fans have seen this before. They know what Sam Pittman is capable of. And Andrew Rame, at the same time, folks, people forget this with all these overlaying narratives. But he was committed to Oklahoma, the dream school, and then decommitted from the dream school because he had to open things up. And every time the conversation of Andrew Rim comes up in my mind, I remember the young man telling me for the longest time there was something different about Sam Pittman. There was something different about talking to him when he didn't want to talk to really any college recruiters. They didn't talk about football. They spoke about life after football, life before football, things, personal things, his family. Rame is just a guy, and I remember him telling me in mid-April when he was dropping the top five and naming some official visits. He said Sam Pittman was the only coach he really talked to anymore. These are things that allowed Georgia to get in this race for sure.
So when I think about the opening that's about to go down, and I think I've told you this, one of the things that's probably the most exciting to me is for some of these national names that, you know, it's just frankly hard for you to fly out and see. Now, you've been doing a lot of traveling as of late, but in terms of all the different guys that are kind of on the landscape for Georgia, it's hard to get up there and see them all. But for a lot of those uncommitted names, they're going to be in one spot this week. So for me personally, now I won't get to read all of this in the moment because I will be gone and out of town, but I am looking forward to hopefully getting a chance to hear from Darnell Washington comes to mind, who I really haven't heard from a ton lately. I'd love to hear from him. Some of these national guys that we just don't get to hear that much from, I'm kind of excited about that. What are you most looking forward to in terms of the coverage opportunities, the opening, and just from an evaluation standpoint, some of the things that you're hoping to see?
Yeah, well, I mean, for a guy like me that covers Georgia now, it has totally changed from a guy that covered Georgia 3 or 4 years ago. Like, I would probably already have, you know, platinum or onyx medallion status with Delta or A-list with Southwest if I had to go see these guys every weekend. Because Georgia, we've wrote about this, we've spoken about this, Brandon. I don't think the class is going to include any more than 7 or 8 kids from the state of Georgia. I think the other 17 or 18 will come from kids outside the state of Georgia. And it's not like SEC footprint Georgia either. 6'7.5" Darnell Washington. Kendall Milton out of California. You know, Washington comes out of Nevada. Milton comes out of California. Ringo, the aforementioned Ringo, comes out of Arizona. Noah Sewell, man, he to me, I heard he's weighed in of late at recruiting events at like 270. And yet he moves like a fullback, or he moves like a guy that's 220, 230 at inside linebacker. Sewell is a Polynesian player. Lots of players in his family are already in major college football. He was working with the running backs, Brandon, at a recruiting event. And I want to see that young man move, and I want to see how well he carries that weight, especially at an inside linebacker spot. Zachary Evans out of Houston, Texas, will be there. I mean, it's funny. Aside from like Cedric Von Prawn and Jones, and then you've also got Andrew Rain, who won't be at the opening here this week either. But aside from that, you've got a lot of the big names in the college football recruiting world that will be there. Brian Brzee, everybody remembers that name. I think he's one of 9 Clemson commits that will be there. Georgia has 6. You get to see one of the hottest recruits in the country right now, which is Marcus Rosemy. Out of St. Thomas Aquinas in Fort Lauderdale. He just roasted everybody at a recent big-time camp. He'll be here as well, and you'll get to see Carson Beck, the quarterback, who I think it is a crime that somehow there are 7 other quarterbacks rated higher than him right now along those 24/7 sports composite ratings. And he'll get a chance to make his move up that leaderboard as well, maybe stake his claim, which I think he should rightfully be considered as one of the top 3 quarterbacks in the country by anyone's estimation. He'll get a chance to throw to Darnell Washington. Kendall Milton will actually be on the same 7-on-17 with Carson Beck. So should be a whole lot of fun getting to see a lot of these guys and see exactly what they're like under the hood, so to speak, when they get their oil checked in terms of elite competition.
Is DJ Uiagalelei there this week?
He's not here. He's the one guy that's not here. Lots of quarterbacks wondered about that one because they thought, is he trying to protect his number one ranking? Is he hurt? Did he just want to back off and get away from the recruiting stuff? Well, would have been a good event with all those Clemson guys there. The Georgia would have had 7, could have had Akiola and Gumby remained in the class. They would have been the second most populated school here at the opening. But when you consider names, the names of the targets I just rolled off, like Sewell, Kendall Milton, Darnell Washington, Arik Gilbert. How can we forget Arik Gilbert coming out of the state of Georgia as well? He's going to be here. It's really the who's who. It's supposed to be the who's who every year. And it's all going to take place in sweltering temperatures here at Dallas Cowboy training camp headquarters.
If Uiagalelei is turned off by the competition at Frisco in the Elite 11, then he's going to fit right in the ACC. I can promise you that. But my reason for bringing that up is because, I mean, I think there's a real chance out there, and you can kind of handicap this better than me, and I'm not just saying this because it's what I'd like or what the audience wants to hear, but Beck would have a chance to be the best quarterback here, right? Or I should say there, where you are. Beck would have a chance to be the best quarterback there, right?
Yeah, really, the guys that I think that are kind of right there with him in terms of who could be the best quarterback here, I think Bryce Young, the highly rated USC commitment there, he's a five-star. You know, he's seen as a pro-style passer, much like Beck. The other names, Brandon. You know, you've got Theo Johnson, the Canadian tight end. He's one of the guys I'm really most interested in seeing him in the now 40-inch vertical leap. Jacoby Cowan is here. Potential Miami slip running back Don Chaney Jr. is here. The safety everybody talks about in Miami. Out of Miami, but Oregon commitment Avante Williams. Marshawn Lloyd, another guy that Georgia fans know all about for the running back pecking order for so long. He's going to be here as well. I mean, there's just a lot of guys to consider. But with Carson Beck, Harrison Bailey is going to be here. Bryce Young is going to be here. I think if you had to look at there were sports book or wagering betting odds for such a thing. There are 13 of the nation's top 25 quarterbacks here. Most of them are committed out already. But that number does include 7 of the top 10. I would put Beck's chances of winning this whole shooting match right up there with anybody.
Jeff, I really appreciate your time here. I know that you came on the show later than normal. You accommodated us, and you're on the road. And the fact that you give us so much time from the hotel there is a really generous thing. For the folks, whenever they hear that, be it Friday, Monday, or Tuesday, when they catch up and hear this, how can folks follow everything that's going on with you in Frisco, Texas, at the Star for the opening?
So, you got me on Twitter, at Jeff Sintel. I'm going to put a lot of pictures from what I take. I'm also dabbling in still photography while I'm trying to report all these stories and write all these words. Got Instagram at Jeff Sintel, but I'm going to have an IV of information going into the forum, especially the down low intel thread that's on the forum thread. I'll be kind of keeping it real with everybody in there. And one thing, all you family guys out there, all you family ladies out there, if you can offer me this small window of your time during the weekend leading up. I know it's a lot of family stuff, a lot of beach stuff, a lot of travel. Give me 2 times a day where you'll check in on Dog Nation and hopefully read something about some of these guys, because there's going to be a lot to cover and a lot of guys to get to. And one thing that I promised on Hedges, and I will make good on my promise, if anybody remembers the old school before the Hedges, where it was just Jeff, Stephen Repeat, and his cell phone mounted on the tripod, we're going to do some old school,
nice.
I won't call them fireside chats, but I'll call them outfield side chats from the balcony here when you can overlook it and maybe see minor league AA baseball going on at the same time. We'll do some of that like we did back in the old days and go a little Dog Nation old school, just kind of recapping the events of the day from each week at the Nike opening. Today is a closed session for the media. They just let us know that when we arrive there. Today's a closed session, but Carson Beck and everybody will get things going today. There will be media opportunities and viewing Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all the way through the 3rd. There will be 3 days of the opening, and it looks like 3.5 days of the Elite 11 before that. So should be a very good time checking up and giving you guys whatever you want to know about all these top players.
I know, Jeff. People are going to love that. Thank you so much for your coverage. I'll look forward to catching up with you a week from now when I'm back in town once again. So safe travels to you in Texas. I'll look forward to seeing you soon.
All right, guys. Have a great week. Stay safe.
All right. So really, really thank you all for being a part of this. And as I'm speaking these words, there's a very good chance that I am just as red as can be. And I hope I am. It means I've been out in the sun a lot, enjoying the beach. I'm a big beach guy. I just enjoy it. I love it. And, it's also that great time when, without distraction, without any kind of pull on your attention, you're able to just kind of be with your kids and wife and just let whatever happens. We don't get enough of that kind of stuff in life. And I know all of you probably feel the same way. We're all just so busy that vacation's a time not to be, and I think that's a really good thing. And I am really grateful to all of you for allowing us to make that happen. And, you know, we've done a lot of kind of prediction stuff on the shows the last couple of days, and I can't wait to just watch all this play out. I think the 2019 season is going to be fascinating. So I'll be here before you know it. Dog Nation's proud to provide coverage of it. I see you back here on Monday here on Dog Nation Daily. And by the way, let me say 976 days. That's our Gator Hitter Updater. Y'all have a great week, everybody.